welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, happy Halloween, everyone. Boy, I'm very excited about tonight's show. We're going to be doing something a little bit different. I have a very special guest. Her name is Ingrid Dean. She's an author. She wrote a great book. It's called Spirit of the Bad, 60 True Police Stories of Divine Guidance, Miracles, and Intuition. But the story gets, you know, a little more interesting than that. She's actually a detective sergeant, a forensic artist, and a 20-year police veteran in the Michigan State Police. She's really bringing a new paradigm to the whole field of police work. And in particular, she somehow or another ties Tantra into police work. So that's how she wound up on the Shame-Free Zone. But anyway, I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about her story. But before I introduce her, I just want to tell you we're going to actually be playing some great audio files throughout this hour. And they all have something to do with ghost stories. They're all true. And they are all very professionally produced. They've got music and sound effects. I think you're really going to enjoy them. Anyway, Ingrid Dean, welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you. Now, I understand that you actually got called away. We originally were going to interview you in your at your home number, but now we're talking on your cell phone because you're 400 miles away on police business. Is it anything you can tell us about?
Oh, sure. I do composite artwork, and whenever we have a real serious felony in which there's victims involved and the police need to know who the suspect is, then I'm called on to interview the victims and develop a drawing. And so I got this call in the middle of the night, of course, and I had to travel about 400 miles north on Lake Superior in a small, sleepy town called Marquette, Michigan.
Wow.
And, it's an armed robbery, and the lady victim, unfortunately, was held at gunpoint and had to give up her money, and then the suspect locked her up in the freezer. Poor thing. She's fine now, but I interviewed her today, and we developed a picture, and hopefully we're going to find out who robbed her.
Wow. Well, I'm glad nobody got killed, and I take it she's not, she didn't get, severe frostbite or anything?
No, she's good.
I'm sure it's, I hear any kind of robbery, even if somebody just burglarizes your home when you're away, feels very much like a rape. It's a real violation of one's personal space.
It's very traumatic, and what's really weird, and this has to do with a lot of the stories in my book, a lot of times the police will experience things like, what are the odds? And I kid you not, I get all done drawing this picture for this woman, and then I'm to meet friends this evening for dinner, and on my way, I'm almost to the restaurant, but I can't find it. And I see this guy standing on the corner, and I stop and I ask him, I said, do you know where this Eastern Indian restaurant is? It should be right by the food co-op. And he looks at me, and he looks exactly like the picture that I just drew.
Oh,
and
my
it's
God.
It's really weird. Yeah, he says, I'm not from around here, so I really don't know. And I looked at him, and he had the dark complected skin that the girl described. He had this goatee that the girl described. And as soon as I heard his accent, I thought, oh, my gosh. And so I pulled away, and I called all my police friends, and I said, listen, this is what the guy looks like. I just talked to him. I think he might be who you're looking for. And it's just bizarre because I'm just supposed to meet friends for dinner. And so a lot of the stories in the book are just like this.
Well, it kind of sounds like that guy's got some really bad karma, doesn't it?
Gosh, if it's the guy, I will let you know.
Yeah, please do. Well, yeah, you've treated us with some really fun and fascinating audio files here tonight, and some of them were quite sad. You've got one about a little boy that's very sad. But I thought maybe we could start something off with your best ghost story. Now, you actually sent me several, but I'm going to ask you which one you think would be the best. Would it be Ghost Alarm or Her Voice or one of
these? I'd say Her Voice, because that's it's a story about an officer that's working at the time, and he's at a conference, a DNA-type conference, and he has an experience that has to do with a cold case that he's working on. So I would say Her Voice would be a good one.
Okay. All right. Well, if our producer's there, we want to cue up Her Voice.
Her Voice. When I first heard the woman's voice, I had been involved in the 35-year-old investigation for 8 years. This particular cold case involved the murder of a 23-year-old college student in 1969. Like so many others, this one had been shelved time after time over the years due to a lack of investigative leads. It was the kind of case that every police department has, the one referred to as the case, and everyone knows which one you are talking about. Finally, after years of dead ends, science might come to our rescue. Breakthrough DNA extraction technology had just become available, and evidence from the case had been delivered to the lab for analysis. There was nothing left for us to do at this point but to wait patiently for the results. We desperately hoped for a break in the case. During this time, I traveled to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to attend an FBI-sponsored violent crime seminar. While there, I spoke to several of my counterparts at length, explaining what our scientists were attempting to do with the evidence while fishing for any investigative ideas they might have. After many hours of exchanging tall tales and war stories, I found myself back in my hotel room in the early morning hours and quickly fell asleep, or so I thought. After what seemed like only minutes, I distinctly heard a female voice softly calling my name. As I hovered in that familiar valley between sleep and conscious thought, the voice continued to slowly call my name.
Eric, wake up. I need you.
The voice seemed to be getting closer, increasing in volume and clarity until I knew I was fully awake. As I lay there trying to understand what I thought was a strange dream, I once again heard her voice urgently calling my name and telling me to wake up. I was needed. The voice was so clear and so close, it was right next to me. I could feel her breath on my neck. This realization startled me, and I instantly jumped out of bed and fumbled for the light switch. Maybe someone was playing a trick on me and was hiding in the room. Upon turning on the lights, I saw no one. I searched the entire room, including the closet, bathroom, and behind the TV. I even opened the door to check the hallway for stragglers. All to no avail. I was alone. Needless to say, it took me quite a while to fall asleep after this scare. Eventually, I chalked it up to being a bad dream from sleeping in a strange bed, until I returned home. On the following Monday, as I sat in a meeting sipping coffee and listening half-heartedly to the speaker, I received a 911 page from the lab. Could this be what we've been waiting for all these years? I excused myself from the room and immediately called the lab. They had a positive CODIS notification. Score one for the scientists. They had done what no one else had. Identify the person responsible for this crime. By analyzing the DNA that was embedded into the weave of the victim's clothing by the offender, and matching that DNA profile to a list of known felons, the lab was able to give us a name. We could now move the investigation forward and bring it to a successful conclusion. Although I have never believed in ghosts or the paranormal, I am unable to provide any earthly explanation for what I experienced in that hotel room. I believe it was the victim calling to me and telling me I was needed. Her message of,
"Eric, wake up. I need you,"
is etched firmly in my mind. I can still hear her voice and feel her breath on my neck. She knew it was time for me to wake up, that things were happening that needed my attention. She was right.
Now, Ingrid, I have to ask you, if our listeners who may just be joining us right now, once again, we've got Ingrid Dean. She's the author of Spirit of the Badge, 60 True Police Stories of Divine Guidance, Miracles, and Intuition. And she also happens to be a detective sergeant and a forensic artist who's actually in a small town right now on a case, but agreed to talk to us on this scary Halloween night and tell us a few ghost stories. Ingrid, how did you produce these audio files? Now, all these stories are true, right?
Yes. All of the stories are actually in the book itself, Spirit of the Badge, 62 Police Stories of Divine Guidance, Miracles, and Intuition. I put my own music and sound effects into the stories because for as many audio books as I've ever listened to, I always thought, why don't they add a little bit of drama and theatrics to it? Because, you know, it makes it very exciting. So I did this, and I took all of the stories and really did a lot of the work myself for the audiobook.
Wow. That's really impressive. I'm going to have to pick up a few tips from you because I definitely want to get into audiobooks myself. I think that's cool.
Oh, They're so fun.
So, but are you actually going to be releasing an audio book, or is the book just going to be a hardcover one at this point?
Right now, I released, it's a soft-covered book called Spirit of the Badge. It released on October the 1st, and anyone can find it at Amazon.com or my website, spiritofthebadge.com. I also have the audio book available as of December the 15th, so it's pretty close for Christmas, but it will be the entire book in audiobook form. It'll be like 5 CDs.
Wow. Wow, that's really exciting. Now, what gave you the idea? This is kind of an unusual pursuit for a police officer. I mean, not entirely. I'm aware that Joseph McNamara, former chief of police in San Jose, has actually turned out to be quite a prolific author. So, you know, not the first law enforcement to go into authoring books, but your approach is very unique, I think, especially when you start talking about Tantra and police work. Can you bring that home for us?
You know, it was so cool. I've been a polygraph examiner for many, many years, and I was doing an interview in which a fellow officer was watching me on a closed-circuit monitor, just for safety purposes, as I'm talking to this subject that was accused of a crime. And when I get all said and done, I can't even remember if the person was truthful or if he was deceptive, but I walked into the room where the trooper was, and the exam was all done, and he looked at me and he said, "You're a Tantra cop." And he used the word Tantra. And for a police officer, it really caught me by surprise. And I looked at him because I've studied Tantra and other spiritual practices. And when he used that word, it was like, wow, for a police officer, that's incredible. And he said, you're Tantra cop because you're being nothing but yourself in that room. And I said, well, you know, I'm pretty impressed because most police officers think I must be playing a game if I can, you know, get people to admit to the issues that they have. And it's not about interrogation. You know, when I talk to somebody, I talk to them as if I'm talking to myself because I really feel personally that we are reflections of each other, that our issues reflect from each other. And when he recognized that, that was when I began thinking about writing this book, Spirit of the Badge, because I truly believe that police officers are a lot deeper than people think, and they see a lot of things that they don't talk about, and I speak their language. So I can put it in a book that they understand as well as the public. And so that's where my name Tantra Cop came from, is that it was a fellow cop that named me that, and I felt truly honored.
Wow. Well, you know, the Western concept of Tantra, of course, is very much oriented towards sexuality, and that's not the application that you're referencing here at all. Maybe you can explain to our listeners a little bit about your take on Tantra.
You know, Tantra is not about sex. You know, it's quite the contrary. I personally, in my studies and who I've worked with and what I've experienced in Tantra, is that it has to do with energy, with learning to transmute energy from your lowest chakra up to your crown chakra, and learning to use the heart as your vesica piscis, or your heart as the connection. And in police work, there really is a very inherent longing of the heart, and that's why people join. They may not realize it. They may be unconscious of why they got into police work, but it is to be of service. And I think that police officers want connection and sanctity, and that it drives many officers beyond their five senses. And it goes beyond ordinary life into a transpersonal world of mystery and amazing coincidences. And that's what Spirit of the Badge is all about.
Or not so coincidences, huh? What would you say to detractors who would say that, you know, maybe they've had some negative experiences with police officers and kind of view the profession as something that attracts people who have control issues?
And it does. You know, it's quite unfortunate. And speaking to those listeners out there that have had bad experiences with police officers, we are not perfect. You know, like in any other profession, you're always going to get your bad eggs, so to speak. There are control freaks out there, and I would be lying if I said there wasn't. But the majority of police officers are quite human. They're just like you, and there's no difference. And this stereotypical image that television is projecting right now does not help us. Reality TV and some of the fictional TV, we're just as human as you are. And the majority of us really want to be of service. We're not just the backs.
And since you brought up television, I'm going to ask you if you have seen Holly Hunter's show, Saving Grace.
I haven't.
Oh, you have to check it out.
In short, what's it about?
Well, she's a police officer in the South, and she's very human. She has a lot of foibles. She dates married men, and she drinks too much, and she occasionally breaks the law in order to do something good. She's got a good heart, but she makes lots of mistakes.
Right.
But it's actually a show that has her keeping company with an angel, and her guardian angel is trying to get her to come around and be a better person. So anyway, that's the premise.
Oh, I would love
story.
It. I would love it.
Yes, I think you would love it too. She's an Academy Award winning actress, and she does a great job on this show, and I'm a huge fan of it because of the fact that she's so human, and of course, you know, it's a great role for a woman. And an older woman too. I mean, I think she's 50, maybe turning 51 next year or so.
Oh wow, that's old.
So, you know,
that's about my age. I'm not, you know, that's around my age.
I'm going to be turning 50 next April, so.
Yay!
So it's older, that's for sure. Anyway, and it's great to actually see older women having fabulous roles on television, and not just like, you know, baking cookies or something. She's sexy and she's intelligent and she's full of all kinds of human foibles. So it's a great show. But
what a great role model for younger women too, so that they can look forward, you know, to being, you know, between 40 and 60 years of age. Because I don't know why our society says that we have to grow old and die by age 40. I mean, it's crap.
Well, that's just for the women. I'll tell you what I absolutely positively believe this to be true, Ingrid. I think that society has a real problem with female power. And anybody who's going to be in their mid-40s is going to start having power. And so, you know, if we can keep powerful women out of public office, as in the presidential, you know, we don't need them there. We don't need too many of them, you know, at the heads of corporations, and we certainly don't want them modeling powerful roles for our, you know, daughters, because they might become powerful before they turn 40 or 50, I suppose.
Well, and you know, I think it goes deeper than that. You know, it's not even really being about women, whether you're a woman or a man. I think it has to do with this idea that our country or our society has to suppress feminine consciousness. We're not talking about sex here, whether you're female or not. We're talking about the feminine as in intuition, you know, paying attention to your gut instinct, listening to signs, symbols, and synchronicity. That's feminine. And it doesn't, I don't say feminine as in, you know, sex. I think we all have an element of male and female in us. And because our society suppresses feminine consciousness, we all think we've got to be aggressive and go, go, go and be motivated. Well, that's very male, and it's very good, but it should be balanced. And that's my upbringing. That's me, is to balance male with female.
I couldn't have put it better. I agree with you 100%. We are hugely out of balance, and it's very sad to me to see a lot of young women embracing so much male energy. I think it's great that they went over and got that, but it's not in balance with any female energy. It's as if, you know, the standard became the male standard, and all the wonderful things that you're talking about, like intuition, and you know, maybe, you know, being able to de-escalate a confrontation, which, according to the studies I've read, female police officers have a fabulous record of being able to avoid, a violent situation and turn it into a positive, whereas oftentimes male police officers will rush in and create more problems than need be. Is that also your understanding or experience?
Sometimes, certainly, you know, I think even females will hard charge and go too hard and be aggressive when their own innate abilities are sort of repressed, when if they would just talk and be themselves, that you would de-escalate that situation. But I think where males could learn from the females in the career is that they have a feminine side too. And I'm not saying that in a sexual way. It's just paying attention to your receptiveness as well as your aggressiveness and using both. You know, integrating all of your experience and your education, everything that you've learned in police work, in addition to what's called that intuitive side, that side that is more receiving and not so go, 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 push. You need both.
You know, Ingrid, I have to tell you, I totally get that this is not about the plumbing that you have between your legs, because I've always been male-identified, you know.
Well,
leave it to a sexologist. I'm pretty male-identified female most of my life, and I actually learned to embrace my feminine side from men in my life who did it first. You know, it was like I needed permission actually to embrace my feminine side by having a proper male role model. And since I was so male identified, I needed to be able to see that it was possible for somebody who's masculine to also embrace the feminine, and for them to be powerful by standing still and not always using force or aggression. I would have not accepted that modeling from a woman, because I had so much contempt for that. But being able to see powerful men embrace their feminine side helped me to balance my own energies.
Exactly, and that's cool about men. You know, if they do express a little bit of their heart and not be so masculine 100% of the time, just show us a little piece of your receptive side, that helps us as females.
Yeah.
Just what you're saying, that helps us too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit more about some of these ghost stories. Now, do we have one or two more ghost stories? I know you've got something called Ghost Alarm.
Oh, that's a good one.
Is that a good one?
Did I send you one that's called Wake Up?
Yes. Which of those two would you like to play next?
Let's play Wake Up, because that's an angel intervention story, and there's so many of us in police work that regardless of our belief system, lots of Christians, we have Jewish police officers, Catholic police officers of all different faiths, but it seems like everyone has an angel intervention story. And I love the story Wake Up, because the officer is not even very religious. He's just so certain that a guardian angel saved his life.
Awesome. Okay, your second Halloween treat this evening, Wake Up.
Wake up. Wake up.
About 5 or 6 years ago, I was driving home alone towards Adrian, Michigan. It was close to midnight, and I was tired after working the afternoon shift. I was driving about 65 miles an hour along a highway with farming fields on both sides when I fell asleep at the wheel of my small pickup truck. Just as my vehicle hit the gravel on the shoulder, I heard a loud voice shouting,
"Wake up!
Wake up!
Wake up!
Wake up!
Wake up!
Wake up!"
I opened my eyes and realized I was headed straight for the north shoulder of the road. My head was tilted forward. I knew I had been sound asleep. Awake now, I looked toward the passenger seat and saw a man sitting there. He was staring me in the face, leaning toward me, and yelling at me to wake up. I could only see his outline because a bright glow seemed to come from within and around him. We were looking at each other eye to eye, but the brightness was so great I could only see the contours of his face and body. I'll never forget his intense stare. I immediately looked forward and realized I was approaching the top edge of the ditch. I didn't panic. I took my foot off the gas and steered back towards the roadway. Once I had the truck under control, I looked toward my passenger, but no one was there. A dim light was still glowing, but it soon faded away. It was not a dream. I saw a man, and I felt his presence in my truck. This is an experience I will never forget. If I had driven off the roadway at the speed I was going, chances are my truck would have flipped and death or serious injury would have been the consequence. I truly believe a guardian angel saved my life that night.
This is quite a story.
Are you there? I'm here.
Yeah, I'm here. No. That was a scary angel story.
Well, you know, the guy just swears to it too. He said, "You know, if you weren't a police officer, I probably wouldn't have told you this story," which is another reason why I think that I obtained the types of stories that I did, is because I do work with police officers and I know what their language is. I know how to talk like them. I'm not airy-fairy, and I kind of integrate metaphysics with more grounded facts and analysis.
You know, I understand that. I really do. I really enjoy a lot of different topics, too, but I like keeping it, you know, to the specifics, not getting into the theory of it. The theory doesn't really matter anyway. So what? It's like, what experience have you had?
Exactly. In all of the stories in Spirit of the Badge, leave it to the reader to draw your conclusions. They simply share very exceptional human experiences and unexplainable phenomena. You know, that's what the book's all about.
Now, speaking of unexplainable phenomena, do you have any UFO stories in there?
Oh, yes. So we have a couple of those. I love UFO stories because I think that our society is so egotistical. You know, for anyone to think that we're the only people in the whole universe is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And so I started interviewing officers and asking officers to talk to other officers to see if they had any UFO stories. And one in particular is about a trooper who gets a call from a desk sergeant stating that a woman wanted a trooper to come to her house because of this very unusual object hovering over, and she lives in the country. The trooper admittedly says that he's a little slow about arriving to the house because he thinks that it's a mental patient. And apparently the small town had a mental hospital that had to close down, and, you know, there were a lot of kooks out there. So when he arrives to the front door, the lady answers, and she says, "Do you see it? Do you see it?" And he looks around, and he says, "Nope, afraid not." And mind you, the trooper is very conservative. He's a Christian man. He's in his 50s. He smokes and drinks coffee. He's a member of the local small town school board. So the lady says, "Well, come with me." And he guides him through her house to the back deck. They open the sliding doors, and when the trooper steps out, he said, "Ingrid, my knees literally buckled." He said, "This thing was huge." He said, "It was as big as a football field hovering over me." He said the bottom of it looked like honeycomb cereal. And he said what was really odd is that it didn't make a sound. It was so silent. The dogs could hear it because he saw the woman's dogs in their doghouse at the other end of the yard there, and they wouldn't come out. So they detected something or heard something. They eventually videotaped it. The lady had a neighbor next door that had a video camera, and when she called her neighbor next door, she said, "What do you see out your window?" And the neighbor looked, and all he saw was lightning bolts. He said, "It looks really weird." He said, "But it's like lightning bolts." And she said, "Come on over." She said, "Bring your video camera." And when he got there and stepped out on the deck and looked up, it was nothing like what he saw from his window next door, which makes you really wonder about the Star Trek cloaking and that kind of thing.
Oh, my God.
Great story. Yeah. So they videotaped it, and videotaped it for about 30 minutes, and then these four jets from a local military base, I say local, but it was probably about 150 miles away, these jets come by, and the trooper said as soon as those jets came, the object just, it was gone in a second. He said it was just the weirdest thing. He said it was almost like it was having trouble, but as soon as the jets arrived, they just got the heck out of there. And then, to end the story, he tried to call the military and ask them about the jets because he saw the U.S. Air Force symbol underneath them. And the military completely denied that they had ever been in that area.
Oh, my God. We're like back to Area 51, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. It's just like you'd think we would grow up or something, you know? I mean, we know something's out there, and there's too many unidentified flying objects to not believe that we haven't been visited yet. But
well,
I really feel that government keeps that from us.
You know, I do too, and when it is reported by somebody like a police officer or a pilot, you know, a military pilot or a commercial pilot, or an astronaut, and we've had reports of UFOs from all those professions, it really, you know, kind of lends a lot of credence to the stories, in my opinion.
Well, the trooper said that he received so many calls from pilots that said, "Thank you for saying something, because then we don't look like the kooks out there. Thank you, because at least you have some reliability, some credibility being a state trooper." And they were really appreciative because the government wants to really put that under the rug. They don't want us to know anything.
Yeah, I think they're kind of like the big parent, you know. It's like your parents want to keep everything from you and keep telling you that there's an Easter Bunny and a Santa Claus. And I feel like our government treats us that way.
They do. They treat us like kids. And there's a lot of us that are very grown up and very mature, and we know what we see and we know what we read, and we look at the big picture. And it's going to get to the point where I really do genuinely feel that we're going to know more about these UFOs in the very near future.
Well, I got to tell you, that story gave me Halloween chills.
It's a great Halloween story, yes.
No, it really is. So maybe this would be a good time for us to segue into the next one, which is Ghost Away. Are you ready for us to listen to that, Ingrid?
I love that one. That's a good one.
All right. All right, here we go. Ghost. Been told we don't have Ghost Away.
No? Well, you have me on the line.
I do.
Okay.
What do you think about the little boy?
Well, that's a good one, and that really hits to the heart of police work.
I think since we don't have that other ghost story, let's do that, and we'll segue into something a little more serious here.
Okay. Well,
Do we have the little boy?
The little boy. I was the first police officer at the scene of a one-car accident, arriving only minutes after it happened. Except for my red patrol lights going round and round, the road was dark and lonely. It was the middle of the night. Whoever had called in this accident was nowhere to be seen. A woman had rolled her SUV and was smashed between the driver's seat and steering wheel. She was dead. The silence gave a false sense of peace, until I heard the whimpering of a child. I walked around the vehicle, which was lying on its side, and saw a little boy lying underneath it. The roof covered and pinned half his body, while his head and arms were free. I was alarmed. There was no way I could lift that vehicle. I phoned to make sure help was coming. I prayed that just one car with a bunch of people in it would drive by, but nobody came. The child was conscious and in a surprised voice asked, "Are you a real state trooper?" I chuckled. "Of course I am, silly. I know, I'm just a girl, huh?" The boy gave a half smile and then blurted out, "I want my mom. Where's my mom?" Suddenly, marble-sized tears fell down his cheeks. I saw no reason to tell him that his mother had died. Instead, I tried to reassure him. "My friends are helping her. They're going to take her to the hospital. But you know what? I don't have any children. Could I be your mom just for a while?" He nodded his head and said, "Okay." I took his hand in mine. He was a sweet-faced boy with brown curly locks. He had the most beautiful big eyes I'd ever seen. He looked up at me seriously. "Am I going to die?" he asked. For a split second, I choked. He had obvious internal bleeding. Things didn't look too good. I regained my composure and without hesitation said, "No, you won't die. You know, whether you decide to live in heaven, or if you choose to stay right here on earth, either way, you will still be you, and you will still be alive. Nobody ever dies. We all live forever." He looked into my eyes, and I felt that he understood. With a hint of a smile, he squeezed my hand in trust. After what seemed like an eternal moment, he took his last breath and gently passed away.
Oh, that's a tearjerker.
Oh, it is. Every time I hear it, it affects me the same. It's almost like I must have issues because I always connect with that and I always feel so bad. And I just think it's, you know, it's important to increase the amount of compassion in the world and including police officers and all the first responders out there. We have the capacity to understand the suffering of others and wanting to do something about it. In our position, we can go further than just empathizing. You know, conscious or not, I believe that all police officers and first responders have an innate desire to be compassionate. And that's what we're all about.
Well, it's also kind of a great story for this time of year, too. You know, and sometimes we forget what Halloween was really originally about. It was supposed to be that this is the time of year when the veil that separates those of us that are living from those of us who are, quote-unquote, dead, is the thinnest. And it's traditionally a time when people remember their dead and communicate with their dead. And so I think that's also an appropriate Halloween story for that reason. And maybe, you know, give us a chance, a little pause to think about those of us that, you know, those of our families and friends and loved ones and pets that have passed on. That Halloween is not just about getting drunk or collecting candy.
Right. Well, and you know, you make such a nice point about the veil. I really relate to that because of my own spiritual studies in the past and such. And I truly feel that it is the heart chakra in yogic terms, that acts as the conduit. You know, between our earthly, you know, lower chakras to our higher, more ethereal, godlike chakras. And that the heart is how we go beyond the veils. You know, it's kind of like we're made up of onion. We're like an onion. And the layers, it's sort of our job and our journey, our education, is to let go of all those layers and to see what's left. Now, you can look at it as there's nothing left, or you can look at it as if all of a sudden we have everything and that we are a lot huger and a lot bigger than we have any concept for in our human mind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you're kind of like almost a preacher.
No, I'm not a preacher. It's just like I feel like police officers and first responders have a voice and that we've never been heard. I feel the media does it just a terrible injustice to what we try to accomplish. I mean, we don't join this. The majority of us do not join this to be control freaks. We really do want to be of service, and we're human beings, and people just get caught up in the idea that we want nothing more than to give people tickets or to be in control or something, and that is just not true.
Well, that's one media representation, but the other one I think is that everybody wants to be a cop, and there's this idea that you're kind of almost a superpower out there fighting evil. That's not very human either, is it?
No, it's a little out of whack there. it's interesting because people want to almost be in the cop's shoes to see what they do. But only if they can do it in the protection of their living room. You see, it's a little different than if you actually wear the shoes of a cop. We really put our lives on the line out there, and we have such close calls, and we have to depend on something bigger than we are. So whether a cop admits it or not, innately they know that there's something bigger than them. You know, that's what Tantra is sort of all about. It's not about sex. It's about understanding yourself as energy, that we're all reflections of each other, and that it's important to live in the moment. Living in the moment is what we forget about the most in this Western world, especially.
No, we really do. I actually got to ride shotgun with a female police sergeant from San Jose, and it was years ago. I was in my late 20s, and I had a little TV talk show on Community Access, and I was interviewing her for the show, and so I actually got to go out and do a remote as part of the research. Now, I didn't bring cameras with me, which was unfortunate, but it was amazing. It was a quiet little Sunday evening, and I think we rode from, I'm going to say, you know, like 4 o'clock in the afternoon to midnight, that kind of a shift. But, and conducted like only 2 busts. One of them was picked up a guy who was loaded on PCP and wandering the streets, so he got arrested. And then he tipped us off to where he had gotten his drugs. So that took us to a private home, and it was a apartment complex. And I actually got to get out. You're not going to believe this. I don't think they would do it now. But I got to get out of the police car and storm up to the apartment door with the police officers who were, they were drawing their guns. And I was unarmed, and I didn't have a vest on or anything, and we bust into this home, and the baby's crying, and there's, you know, it's a family. But the grandpa was hiding in the closet, and he was the heroin guy. So
right.
We ended up finding a big stash of black tar heroin, and I went home that night, and I could not sleep for hours. It was such an adrenaline rush.
It's different actually being in the shoes, isn't it, than watching television? It really is different.
Yeah. It was really quite amazing. And of course to see, you know, like, to think that that was what she considered a slow night, and I couldn't sleep afterwards.
You know, I think sometimes police officers have to really pick and choose how deeply they want to go into some of these experiences, because we really do have the opportunity to experience multidimensional levels of consciousness. And this has nothing to do with what religion you are or what you believe in. We see life on different levels because everybody is different. Every situation is different, and it's usually stressful. You know, somebody's life is on the line, or somebody's hurt, or they need assistance. And this is what helps develop our perceptual, intuitive skills. And I think at a level that's beyond the average person. Now, I know people will argue with me and say, oh, you got to be kidding. You know, police officers are there nothing for control. That's all they want. And that's not true. We live life very deliberately because things happen very quickly, and we have to live in the moment. We really do push ourselves to do the best we can using our reasoning, our training, in addition to our intuition and compassion towards others.
Well, we only have a few more minutes left. What is the one thing you'd really like the listeners to gather from tonight's program, besides the entertaining value, which, by the way, was just off the charts, and I thank you for these beautiful programs you've gifted us with, but what would you like people to walk away with tonight?
The book is Spirit of the Badge. The book that I compiled, it's stories that are gathered and read. They're read like true crime drama. They're in the officer's own words, and it's an effort to show a very all-embracing, comprehensive, transpersonal view of law enforcement. And these stories include both extraordinary and ordinary moments. And I think the book captures some very sacred moments in ordinary police life, you know, as well as the enigmatic, numinous moments that that stretch officers beyond their everyday reality.
Well, I hope your book gets produced into a show. Wouldn't that be great? I think you're well on your way.
It's so sweet of you. I would love to see that. I just genuinely feel that there is a different perspective of police officers that's been completely missed, in that if people would go to my website, spiritofthebadge.com, that you'll see what I mean. Again, the audiobook is for sale, and of course the book itself, you can go to any bookstore and order it. Spirit of the Badge, 60 True Police Stories of Divine Guidance, Miracles, and Intuition.
Awesome. Before we close out here, Ingrid, I've got a question for you. The children and the kid, which one of those do you think we ought to close tonight's show with?
Wow. Well, the children is about two children that needed to go into the light.
Oh, let's do that. Don't tell us anymore. Don't tell anyone.
Okay. And then the other story is a monster story. So it's up to you. I'm going to leave it up to you.
Thanks for squeezing that in there. Actually, I think we ought to go with the monster story. So, Dawn, if we have the kid, let's play that on our way out today, and we'll skip our usual musical outro, and I wish all of you a happy Halloween for your listening pleasure, The Kid.
The Kid. Abandoned mines are extremely dangerous to explore and even to go near. In Utah, many are undocumented, especially on private property. Mine shafts are particularly hazardous because they are nothing but vertical openings that go very deep, some more than 1,000 feet into the earth. People can fall into the shafts, never to be found again, which makes abandoned mines and mine shafts ideal places to dump dead bodies. A confidential informant told me that a body had been dumped down a winze of an abandoned mine shaft. Winzes are vertical drops, but within the mines themselves, they are shafts that connect one level to another lower level, like an elevator shaft without the elevator. Winzes can descend to depths that are water-filled, toxic, and radioactive. I'm sure bodies can decompose quickly if culprits know what they are doing. I do not recommend anyone ever explore such places. The shaft collars of those dormant mines are often loose and unconsolidated, and the sides of the walls break away easily from intrusion. I drive into the quiet countryside and get permission from the owner to investigate the abandoned mine on his property. I first search for any disturbances in the area, such as loose gravel, footwear impressions, and blood. Anything to indicate that a body was dumped. I don't see anything unusual. What I do find are old equipment, piles of waste rock all around, and a couple of old buildings left standing. I spot what I believe to be a mine tunnel. At least this is consistent with what the informant told me. You can't always trust an informant's information. I shine my light through the mine opening and see movement in a dark corner. It appears to be a child, about 4 feet tall. I immediately yell to him, "Police, come out. You are not in any trouble. It is too dangerous for you to go any farther. Hello?" There is no answer. I think it might be the rancher's kid, but learn later he didn't have any children. This is a desolate area, and it doesn't appear like anyone has been here in a long time, not even vehicles. Reluctantly, I step into the opening of the mine. I do not intend to proceed much farther. It is too dangerous. The opening is held up by old support timbers that seem safe enough and stable, but could easily be rotted wood. I try not to be fooled by appearances. Such old structures can easily disintegrate from the weight of just one person. "Young man," I said,
This is not a cave. It is unstable and can cave in. Come out.
I am anxious for the boy to walk out, as I know the dangers of these places. Still no answer. I walk into the mine a little farther, and I see movement again.
I see you. Come out. I just want to talk to you. You can die if you fall down a hidden shaft.
There is no answer. Yet I know I am not seeing things. It has to be a kid. It moved on two legs and appeared agile. He moved quickly. I was certain the kid was playing games with me. Then I thought to myself, okay, I'll just be totally still and catch you on your way out. Then I'll give you a good scolding and send you home. I stand behind a support beam for what felt like an hour. In reality, it was probably only 20 minutes. It was a hot day and time felt like it was standing still. A flicker of movement. I see the shadow again. But as soon as I see it, it disappears. And I swear I didn't move a muscle. I start to second guess myself and think, well, it could be an animal. Maybe it is a bear or a mountain lion and is merely escaping the noon heat. After all, animals are known to den in these mines. I keep one hand near my pistol at all times. It must have been 100 degrees, even in the cooler recesses of the mine. I take a drink of water, and it moves again. The shadow is definitely two-legged, and there are two obvious long, slender arms. It is human, all right, I think. I no longer doubt myself.
Come on, I shout. I could use your help right now. Talk to me.
It moves swiftly again from one support structure to another. I can see it clearly in the dark. I stand still for another 20 minutes. I decide to wait until it is close enough, and then I'll shine my flashlight on it. Admittedly, I am hot, getting frustrated, irritated, and tired of waiting. Nevertheless, I remain motionless and unwavering. When I'm truly beginning to doubt myself, I finally see movement again, coming closer and closer. He was almost within arm's reach. I had him now. I surprised him. I shined my light on him in one swift click of the button. When he turned toward me, I saw a reptilian-faced creature that scared the shit out of me, and I ran. The instant the light shone on its face, it dove into the earth like it was water. Initially, I thought he went into a winze. But there was not an opening. It was solid ground. I wasn't seeing things. Its face was greenish-gray and reptilian. Maybe it was an animal, but no one has been able to convince me of that yet. It was too weird. If you turn the page, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being perfect, I rate the accuracy of my memory at 8.5. I suppose it could have been a person in a mask. But in a dark mine, with no one else around.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Yeah.